get ready to rumble!
Thanks, Rob, for joining us today. Just for the audience, I know you're very popular on LinkedIn with your videos and a lot of your posts and information, but why don't we introduce yourself to the audience? Tell them who you are, your background, maybe a little more intimate kind of discussion directly from the source of truth, which is you.
Okay, great. Matt, great to be here. Thanks a lot for having me. I'm a virtual CISO. So my company, Fractional CISO, helps companies run their cybersecurity programs. Just give a little bit of my background. So I started in technical roles, developer, you know, other technical roles. Then I moved into product management. And one of the kind of cornerstones of my career was working for RSA Security. So I was there for a little under 5 years, learned a lot about security. And then the next couple of companies, I actually helped run some aspects of their cybersecurity program. And then in June 2017, I quit my job and started Fractional CISO. So
That's a leap of faith.
It was a leap of faith. It was a lot of planning, though. So
yeah, okay.
Okay. So, you know, basically, it wasn't like one day I woke up and did it. It was really deliberate planning, at least for 9 months. And then the reality is, it was probably I was thinking about it for a couple of years. And fortunately, hit the market at the right time. Now we're almost 5 years later, and we have 12 employees, and things are going great. I mean, it's a great time to be helping companies with their cybersecurity programs. Most of our clients are mid-market SaaS companies, and they, you know, obviously have good technical leadership, but, you know, running a cybersecurity program is not the same thing. First of all, they don't necessarily know what to prioritize. There's lots of mm-hmm. things to do. And then secondly, there's all that fun policy work and those sorts of things. And I've never met an engineer that liked writing or training on policies.
No, it's kind of a lot of work and very tedious. I do agree with that statement.
Yeah. So I would say it's less tedious, but yes, it is a lot of work. And, you know, and we help kind of take out some of the tediousness, although you still have to read the policy, still have to edit the policy, still have to make it yours, and still have to get the employees to follow the policy. So there's that fun part.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's great. I really appreciate you having on. So let's jump into the meat of the podcast today. Okay. We're going to start off with thinking out loud.
I'm thinking out loud. Maybe we found love right where we are.
So Rob, as a virtual CISO in your day-to-day activities, what do you think about most when you wake up in the morning? What is on top of mind most of the days or all the days of the week? You know, what is the thing you're challenged with in terms of accomplishing? Let me hear it from the source.
Yep. So this may be non-intuitive for most technical folks, but the number one thing is persuasion. And, you know, when we think about a lot of the challenges with cybersecurity, whether it is with engineering to follow the secure SDLC process or to point out an issue, or when we think about just kind of a regular end user and training them not to click on things, you know, in the case of the end user where they're clicking on, you know, get the free iPad.
Yep.
It's really that email is written very persuasively for them as a target. And we need to persuade them otherwise that it's not a good idea. Like, think about it for a minute, then don't do that activity or report it, that sort of thing. And the same thing with developers. You know, developers all the time, when we will go in and talk to development teams, like, oh yeah, I knew that was a bad practice, but everyone was doing it. So I was like, eh, you know, and the thing is like, well, you knew it was a bad practice, but, you know, it's a lot of work. It's not fun cleanup, that sort of thing. But if we can persuade people to kind of make that part of the everyday, you know, spending an extra 10 minutes, half an hour a day is much better than spending months on a cleanup project trying to clean up your code that has a lot of issues, or patching every library you haven't patched in the past 5 years.
Yeah, I think I just, you mentioned this, you know, the free email or the free iPad. I said, I think we should change the phrase from there's no such thing as a free lunch to there's no such thing as a free iPad.
Right. That probably would stop a lot of clicks.
Exactly. And there's no free iPads. There's no free iPhones. There's no free anything. You got to do something. So just that kind of just popped into my head just as a silly thought. But yeah, no such thing as a free iPad. Awesome. So let's move into the section where you can really talk about what is ticking you off these days, which is the rant session.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now you're going to hear about it.
Awesome. So I'm going to go outside strictly of cybersecurity, but stay in the persuasion frame.
Okay.
And I would say the biggest thing that's ticking me off is around social media and specifically TikTok, but that's just one of the many problems. And when we think of TikTok and we are letting kids do it, and you know, if you look at the general population, it's kind of 35 and under, that 70%+ of the users, we are going to have a real problem in a couple of years where all the folks using TikToks are voters. TikTok has a bigger financial and media footprint, and things such as discussing problems with the Chinese Communist Party and what they're doing is not going to be allowed. And also the likely persuasion tools that they're going to use to persuade society to maybe US is bad, China is good, those types of things.
Yeah.
It is extremely dangerous for our society, maybe unlike any other thing that we're doing. And because the problem is once they're in our heads and once all these kids become consistent voters, we will never be able to rid ourselves of it. And so the thing is, if we don't take drastic action now on TikTok specifically, there may be no undo button. On social media in general, there is obviously a lot of other problems. And, you know, just the one I would focus on is letting kids use social media, you know, maybe just have an age restriction or have some sort of controls around kids and social media. It's super addictive. It's rewiring their brains before they're fully developed. And it is a clear and present danger to society.
Yeah, I am in 100% agreement because I actually have two teenage daughters and I see it firsthand. They can just, one more than the other, but they can just lose hours just looking at TikTok one after the other. And I'm like, why don't we go and do something? And the thing is, a lot of their news is now funneled through, you know, organically created content by some TikToker in somewhere in the country. And they say, well, they said it's true. It's like that commercial, you know, they said it was a French model. It was on the internet. It had to be true. Kids see it as it was on TikTok. It has to be true.
But even if it's true, just imagine if you only hear bad things about the US government and good things about the Chinese government.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just from a, you know, even if it's factually accurate, like, you know, consistently telling you certain things and not consistently telling you other things, it could be really damaging.
Yeah. And then there's the aspect of people sharing too much stuff within the TikTok, you know, where they are, their PII data, all that type of stuff. It just baffles me the amount of information they'll give out every day. And people just kind of, you know, comb that interface to get more and more information about you.
I think the other thing to think about is what network scanning is going on in your home network when your daughters are using TikTok.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary. I've been trying to block TikTok on my network and it is very hard because they have a huge set of domains that are under their control. Anyway, it's a very challenging firewall rule entry problem.
I feel you. Well, that's a good rant session. I definitely resonate with that rant session. So, all right, now it's flipping the coin. If you had the magic wand and you could do whatever you want, the Nirvana world, according to Rob, would it be destroy TikTok forever? Or what would that be?
I'll just say in general, basically default security settings, or especially for the small and medium business products. So when you look at all of these small companies, and I'll say small, even like to 150 employees, they're often horrible security practices, right? So multi-factor authentication is not turned on, things are not patched. You know, imagine if all the products designed for the SMB market just had auto update turned on, you know, basically ship default secure with all the ports closed, other than maybe, you know, super obvious ones that needed to be open. Multi-factor was like, you know, you give you a week and then it just auto turns on. Society would be so much better off. It's absolutely insane. That, of course, translates in general to every product. If we just ship things default secure, right? It would make every engineer's life so much easier, because why is it that when you get a product, the first thing you have to do is change all the settings? You know, why is it that Office 365 is default insecure and that you have to make a million setting changes that are in a tons of different menus. It's not even like you could just go through the checklist and go through one menu and you're set. Default behavior is, if I could wave my magic wand, everything would ship default secure. If I get maybe a few more wishes with my magic wand, I would go on, few other things. So like everyone gets trained on cybersecurity in high school and college when they get onboarded on their job, and just some of the other very basic things that would make our society way, way more secure and give the fraudsters a lot more trouble.
Yeah, it's more about just, educating them on life things and, the internet, IoT, all this type of stuff is here to stay. And people just think it's there for their convenience when it's actually just a very bumpy road in terms of risk and how things are configured and what you can do and what you're not. And just teach them the hygiene on how to do things right and not tell them where they are every day or, clicking on something just because, again, that free iPad idea, there's no such thing as a free lunch. There's no such thing as a free iPad. Nobody gets a free iPad. Let's just take it away.
No such thing as a free iPad.
No, that's awesome. Well, that's very insightful. Again, I really like that view where, we got to make things easy for people, especially when they're not experts in an area. And you say you work with a lot of SMB. I mean, people are struggling for cybersecurity professionals at every level of an organization, from the biggest in the world to the smallest. So the biggest are probably going to get the best and brightest. The smaller ones are probably going to struggle to find people or, have to take a leap of faith with somebody that may be a little bit unqualified, not unqualified, but unexperienced of some other people. So I see that as a value to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think for the very small companies, there's really very little that they can do. You just got to hope that your IT person knows something about cybersecurity and can set things up properly. As you get into more mid-sized companies, it's easier to help those companies just because you can scale by using consulting companies like ours or other resources or basically assign a fraction of a person inside your organization to do security stuff.
No, very cool. All right, we're going to move into more of a faster pace now with the speed round. Because he's going the distance. He's going for speed. So let's jump into the speed round. I have one question that's specifically aimed at you, and the other ones are something that I ask all the customers. So in terms of cybersecurity, the term DevOps or DevSecOps, what's your opinion? People get very passionate about this. I bring it up every time because I just find it interesting about different people's view on two very similar terms that could be the same thing or they could be vastly different. So is it DevOps or DevSecOps? Let me hear it.
If we were doing DevOps securely, it would be called DevOps because security would just be an obvious baked-in thing.
Yep.
If we were, I do think adding the sec is obviously some sort of persuasive tool, right? You're basically trying to remind people. I'm not a big fan of adding sec into everything that you do because it's just, basically we should try to live our lives more securely, right? So, So ideally we should do DevOps. I think if it does persuade the audience, maybe especially if you're talking to non-technical folks and you're trying to describe the value prop of DevOps, I think the security is a clear value proposition. So I think in that perspective, it makes sense. I mean, in general, DevOps, I think, describes exactly the thing. So
yeah,
I would prefer that, but I get the DevSecOps.
Yeah. And you mentioned the security moniker. I mean, you've been doing this a long time. I've been doing this a long time. I find, especially with network teams, development teams, you call something a bug. It's a functional bug, or you just call it a bug and people are like, okay, it's a bug. We fixed the bug. You call it a security bug. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I can't believe it's a security bug. I don't know how to fix this. I'm like, it's the same thing as that functional bug or that configuration bug. It just has security implications. Why is everybody freaking out? And I think the second thing scare people off just because they don't want to be held responsible.
I think that is an interesting point. I mean, to me, every time I talk to DevOps folks, they seem to get it, but I get the reluctance there. That's an interesting point. I mean, I guess I would prefer DevOps, but I can see maybe even some cases call it DevSecOps if you're trying to maybe get funding for your project and explain the value prop.
No, awesome. Very good. So the next question, your opinion on the term shift left, that's probably on every conversation you have as a virtual CISO. What is your take on Shift Left today? I mean, yes, it was very important, I think, but now we've kind of morphed in the way we do things. What's your opinion on Shift Left?
So I think philosophically, totally agree. The earlier in the process you do something, the less likely you're going to have to do rework later. So philosophically, totally on board. In terms of, you know, in terms of using shift left, I don't know. It's a non-obvious term for folks who don't already know what it means. And for folks who already know what it means, they probably know the value proposition of doing things earlier. So I would say it's, you know, maybe it's outlived its usefulness as a term, but, you know, also I'm not gonna, you know, if your point is we gotta design this thing securely, I'm all on board.
Yeah, from the beginning, but, you know, again, talking in a very unscientific study, I asked people like, well, how many applications have you written from scratch recently? And there's always a lot of like,
zero.
I think there's a mobile app we started from zero. So it's like, where is the left? It's always about, there is no beginning anymore. There's just this organic process that continues to evolve.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be like the beginning of the project, whether or not you're repurposing code or using a bunch of open source code to get it started. But
awesome. So, you know, this is how we came into touch. So my favorite, who do you look up to in the industry? Who do you follow on LinkedIn, or who do you like to read articles about? Because Walter liked you and I reached out and I saw your stuff. I didn't know you and now I do. And I think it's fantastic. So,
yes. Oh, so I love Walter's stuff, especially around vulnerability management, because, you know, the whole patch everything, you know, basically patch on a risk-based basis makes perfect sense to me. So I love that he's emphasizing that point. Hopefully, you know, we'll get more and more traction there. The folks that I follow the most, you know, probably one is Brian Krebs. So his Krebs on Security, he does, you know, original investigative journalism around cybersecurity and just, you know, great person to follow. David Spark does a number of the CISO Security podcasts and he has a couple of podcasts. So I listen to a lot of that content. You know, typically CISOs speaking about different topics and super valuable content. And then the third one, this person does not post a lot, but Scott Piper, and I think it's Summit, I think I wrote it down. I didn't write it down. Okay, but anyways, I think it might be Summit Security or something along those. So Scott Piper, he has the AWS Security Maturity Roadmap, and he writes some great content on securely deploying AWS. So it's very infrequent, but, you know, basically if you Google them and look for that document, the AWS Security Roadmap, I feel like it would be super valuable to a lot of your listeners. Just because, you know, he has a great list. I mean, I would only maybe tweak a few things on his list, but it's a great way to get someone to look at their AWS deployment in a secure fashion.
Oh, some great names. I know a few of them, but the last one I'll look him up because not familiar with everybody. And it's education for me as well, because I like to, you know, see who other people follow and trust. So it really helps me out. And I hope it helps the audience out as well. So the last question is specifically for you in the speed round. You do a lot of great videos. Do you have a favorite video and why is it your favorite video? I like the one about drones hacking the Tesla, I think it was. I thought that was funny the way you delivered that. But of the video and why is that one of your favorites?
Yeah. So we shifted a couple months ago to the new Rob and Rob acting crew. So basically they film me on with one character and another character. And I wear now usually like a fake wig or hat or something. And I would say the reason I like these ones, and I don't know if I have a favorite there. One of them definitely got a lot of traction, but the general thing is the audience seems to like it. So even, you know, some ones I record, I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And then I'll get like 1,000 views. I'm like, oh, I'm glad we spent an hour filming that thing. But, you know, versus some of these other ones, I've gotten tens of thousands of views. And, you know, it's about security, but I do it in kind of a fun manner. So I don't know if I have a favorite, but I do like the fact that this Rob talking to Rob has been a big hit with the LinkedIn audience. We're going to just keep going that route. And I do like the one you mentioned about the drones, but.
It's like, why did they need the drone? That just made me laugh. I'm like, true. It's like, everything's better with a drone.
Everything's better with a drone. It's true.
It makes everything. Well, cool. That's the speed round. Great insight. I really like that session. So appreciate all your thoughts and comments and humor at the end with your videos. So now I'm going to move into the expert witness section, and I get to ask you a couple questions.
Awesome.
Your Honor, I move to disqualify Ms. Vito as an expert witness.
Can you answer the question?
No, it is a trick question.
So, Rob, you're a virtual CISO. Everyone is in the industry sees CISO and they're like, that's the guy, that's the guy, that's the guy. What do you see as the biggest challenge for a CISO these days? Whether it's, you know, the CISO of a Fortune 500 company or a virtual CISO, what is the challenge? Is it business? Is it technology? Is it people? What is the challenge that faces a CISO in today's kind of crazy world of cybersecurity?
Yeah. So for a Fortune 500 CISO, I think it's going to be a lot different than for a virtual CISO for a mid-sized company. Mm-hmm. You know, in general, and I suspect this is true, convincing senior management that certain things are important is really challenging. You know, because basically when you're trying to communicate risk to a CEO, guess what? His or her life is filled with risk. It could be, you know, financial risk, it could be, you know, sales risk, whatever it is. So when you say, oh my gosh, we have a big issue, that doesn't mean that the dollars are just going to flow. So convincing senior management, you know, basically building a credible plan, explaining the challenges, you know, that's probably the biggest challenge because, as you know, the attack surface is so large. You know, so basically you not only do you have to build a great plan, but you have to convince folks that it's a great plan.
Yeah, I can definitely say that. And it's always like convincing. It's about how much is this going to cost me? And I've said this a bunch of times where people, you know, try and use the tact of we'll be out of business if we've been hacked. You're probably, unless you're a really small company with 10 people or you're just starting up, you probably won't be out of business, but it's just going to cost you a buttload of money to fix the problems that potentially happen.
Yeah. Although you could argue that Nortel and Westinghouse Nuclear both went out of business due to Chinese hacks and them stealing their intellectual property.
Statement. Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, no, definitely. There are instances. I can't say, yeah.
I generally agree with you.
Yeah, just like security products. Is this 100% secure?
Yeah.
Nothing's 100% secure. So there's always the edge cases.
Yep.
So I find that interesting. So also want to ask you as virtual CISO is, you know, my passion these days, I came out of the SaaS world for many, many years where scanning of the source code for vulnerabilities in OWASP top 10. But now my passion is around application security posture management. Have you heard of it? You know, what's your take on it? Is it something that, just give me your opinion. That's basically what I'm looking
for. Yeah. So, yep. So, you know, definitely heard of it. You know, in general, I would say the maturity around security management of your cloud infrastructure, your resources, how you're, you know, do folks really even understand the data flow through their environment? The maturity there is low. And so there's a lot of room for improvement and both just understanding one and then say, oh my goodness, you know, if someone did this, this would lead to a bad result and then fixing it. So, you know, to me, it's a very obvious space to be spending resources.
Well, very good. Yeah. And I kind of consider it's like, you know, the telephone game when you were a kid where, you know, you tell somebody, gets all the way back around and what that originally was is totally different. You know, you talk about an aggressive CI/CD pipeline. Everybody starts pushing, you know, incremental releases through the CI/CD pipeline. All of a sudden, the app that's in production looks nothing like what the architecture looks like because you've had so many people touch it, change it, update it, so on and so forth.
And who has the comprehensive view of how the app looks today?
Yes. I mean, you can go back to the original threat model or the original CMDB, but that's dated, never been updated. Right. So, yeah, it's always a challenge. Awesome. So let's move into the next section. As a virtual CISO and working with organizations, it's tattoo code and data flows. I'm a big fan of the tattoos. Cybersecurity in general seems to be accepting of it. But with that CISO level title, what's your take on tattoos and expression of cybersecurity professionals?
So let me say this way. I mean, I actually have not surveyed all my employees, but I would say everyone under 35, I think there's a greater than 50% chance that they have a tattoo at least. So the industry, so whether or not you like them or not, 20 years from now, the industry will be like It'll be hard to find someone without a tattoo in cybersecurity.
My beard will be a much whiter than I guess it's working right in the middle, but it'll be much whiter. Right. By
And I think, you know, the other thing is it's such a struggle to find highly qualified cybersecurity people. I just can't even imagine making physical appearance decisions on your cybersecurity person. You know, you're not hiring the lead actor for a movie, right? You're hiring someone who's going to do a great job with cybersecurity. So, I can't even imagine. I bet you haven't even run against that into anyone who said, well, yeah, no, you know, no tattoos.
I've heard it a few times where they're like, well, they're really? a little edgy. It's just conversations. Like I got somebody like that guy, they don't come out and say it, but like, he's very unique looking. And I'm like, yeah, but he's really good at his job.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was a lot of press on women with tattoos and on LinkedIn too, and professional women. And it kind of really snowballed into this huge thing about, hey, just be yourself. You know, the more creative you are with your personal appearance, probably the more creative you are to approach problems at your job.
Yes. Well, I mean, I guess from that perspective, that doesn't seem like today's thinking in hiring or managing a team.
Yep. So, yep. Always about the social aspect, because you can't do much without good people. And
you can't do much without good people.
Yeah. Well, and we got to stop caring what people, good people, you know, present themselves as, if you will. So
Matt, it sounds like have you run into that challenge, and have you run into it recently?
I haven't.
Because okay, all right,
I have not. I mean, a little bit when I was a little bit younger in my career, you know, yeah. Middle to late 40s now, so
yeah.
Pushing back 20 years, I had tattoos then, and it was kind of like, oh, you have a tattoo, that's interesting, what does it mean? Now it's kind of like, oh, cool tattoos. So it's even like the questioning has changed. It's like, why does that mean to, oh, those are really cool.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, this is your chance in the wrap-up session to kind of talk about what you're passionate about. Is there a charity? Is it your video series on LinkedIn? What is the thing that Rob really wants to promote about you and your company today?
Yep. So first, Matt, thanks a lot for the opportunity to speak today. This has been a great conversation. You know, as you alluded, my LinkedIn, you know, we focus on putting out real high quality content twice a week. And we drop those videos every other week. We have some really good long form content that we typically drop on Thursdays. So I would just encourage your listeners, if they're interested, to follow me on LinkedIn. I would say one thing that we do that's different is we really try to share all of our learnings. So, you know, a lot of times you'll have a short form article. That article mm-hmm. will hold out like key details. We'll tell you everything. We'll tell you what we would tell our clients. Now, obviously, it's not customized to your environment, yeah. But you know, we include some really, really good stuff. So I would say follow us on LinkedIn. And if you're really passionate about us, go to fractionalciso.com, click on newsletter and subscribe to our newsletter. We have a once monthly drop. We write a real good article and some other, you know, technical tips and that sort of thing. And our subscribers find it really valuable.
Awesome. No, I definitely, I can highly recommend Rob's content and, you know, all the platforms. I think he does a great job. So it's very educational, even, you know, to me on a day-to-day basis. I'm like, ooh, there's a new video by Rob. Let's go watch that one. So something to break up the day, and it's interesting content delivered in an interesting way. That's the best way I can put it. Cool. So just one final question to you as we go out the door. Do you see a rise in fractional CISOs? Are there a lot out there? Is this something that is going to get bigger and bigger? Because it's curious to me that, you know, I definitely see the fit and the need and the practicality of it, but do you see it becoming more of a kind of a practice for the fractional CISO or just getting, because you're in the trenches, your opinion?
Yeah. So when I started in 2017, it definitely was not a thing. I mean, it was a little bit of a thing. Today, it's way more mainstream. It seems like it's going to be the obvious way to handle the mid-market type companies and maybe even larger companies when, you know, there's a departure. So, you know, I suspect it will grow substantially. I also think just from a regulatory standpoint and from a society standpoint, let's say mid-size and up, you know, depending on how you define mid-size, company will have to have a CISO of some sort.
Yep.
So I suspect there will be a lot more entrants into the market. And we've seen in the past couple of years just a huge interest increase. And then all, you know, also our our client base has been growing significantly in the past couple of years. So, you know, definitely markets on the upward trend. And you know, something, I guess, if any of your listeners are interested in, it's a great space to be in. You know, you got to meet lots of interesting different companies, understand their challenges, and then apply your know-how to them and really can scale out your knowledge in a way that you can't necessarily do at a single company.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's great having you today, Rob. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Matt.
Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay.